Hello and welcome to the Coaching in Education podcast from Growth Coaching International, where we explore the power of coaching conversations to transform leadership, learning and well-being in schools. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and in this special Stories from the Coaches episode, we're taking a deeper look into the journeys of some of our own GCI consultants, exploring their pathways into education, leadership and coaching, and uncovering the experiences and beliefs that shape the way they work with schools today. In this episode, I'm joined by Ange Macedas. Ange has enjoyed a remarkable career spanning more than three decades in education across Tasmania as a teacher, leader and principal, alongside roles in school improvement and assessment leadership. Ange is deeply passionate about well-being, coaching cultures, intercultural learning and building communities where curiosity, creativity and wonder can thrive. What will make this conversation particularly special is Ange's reflections on the coaching skill of noticing and how learning to slow down, become more present and notice what is happening both within ourselves and around us can profoundly shape leadership, coaching and well-being. Today we will explore how noticing helped Ange nurture strengths in others, make more intentional decisions as a principal and create space for more mindful conversations in an increasingly hurried world. Ange, it's a pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am very much looking forward to it. Ange, for listeners who may not know you well just yet, tell us a little bit about yourself and the journey that eventually brought you to Growth Coaching International.
Yes, well, I, as you said, wow, three decades, it sounds like such a lot. So over 30 years working in the Department of Education in Tasmania. So started out as an early childhood teacher. And that's my passion. When I became a school leader, like going to visit the kindergarten always brought me a lot of joy. So then moved into some leadership roles, kind of not official titled ones to start with, but then moved into some official leadership and kind of fell into principalship and then moved across principalship with different school communities. Really enjoyed working in schools with a lot of generational poverty and where there was a high level of need. Found that very satisfying working in schools where you felt like you're making a difference. A couple of system roles. And then I was starting to look for what is the next chapter for me. And luckily, I had signed up to the GCI newsletter, and this job opportunity came into my inbox. It was like, oh, we need a senior consultant for Tasmania. And so I thought, oh, maybe that's the next thing, because I was always very passionate about coaching. And yeah, that's how I've ended up here. And it is a great joy to be doing this work.
Superb. You said that you use the term passionate about leading and coaching. Were there any early signs? I mean, way back, we're thinking about three decades here. Were there any early signs that leadership or coaching, for example, would become important to you?
It's interesting because as a teacher, that was what I really wanted to be doing. And I remember thinking when I was working in the classroom that this is where I want to be, and I can't see myself ever moving into leadership. You know, I just love being in the classroom so much. But then it was a very clever principal who gave me a taste of leadership, and that kind of developed this interest in a kind of spreading the influence and being able to work with adults, which I found just as compelling and exciting as working with students. So that's kind of how that developed. But I think I've always been someone who's looked for opportunities. So, you know, I love that looking for what's out there and looking for what's the next step and kind of always moving forward. So perhaps that was always there.
I love that idea where you said somebody very cleverly, you know, provided an opportunity, maybe saw potential in you in those early days. And I think that's what all good leaders do. You know, they see potential in others and then they create the environment in which they say, they open a little bit of a crack in the door and say, I think your words were, you know, give you a bit of a taster for it, which was interesting. So we're thinking about, you know, moving into the whole leadership side of things, and obviously you've great experience as a principal. What would you love most about being a principal?
Oh, so many things, Richard. So I think the thing that I always really loved was working with children. So the you know, making a difference for children and working alongside them. And it's those little moments every day where, you know, someone has an aha moment or someone says, hey, you know, look what I just found out. So those seeing children discover and have agency and grow and learn is really exciting. And that was something that as a principal I was quite keen to hold on to. So until my very last school, I actually held on to a teaching role, which was a challenge. It definitely was a challenge, but it was something that I felt was really important. And I think that gave me credibility, you know, working alongside teachers and saying, hey, I do know what it's like. I'm on the ground with you. But also I got to know all the children and I knew them as a teacher, not just a principal. And that was something that I felt was really important.
Yeah, that resonates with me, Ange, and a lot of our listeners, I would imagine, as well. Having been a teaching principal myself for many years, and essentially you're doing two jobs at the same time. But you're right in that it does bring you a lot of credibility, as well as even your first response was you want to spend more time with the students. So you talked about those lovely ideas where, you know, you see students discover something for the first time, those sort of, I suppose, aha moments. When you think about the trickier times, what were the harder parts of the role whenever you were a principal?
I think it definitely got more challenging, and perhaps that was one of the reasons why I was thinking about what's the next chapter. And there were some parts that were really difficult. I think societal pressures have become a lot greater, and things like technology and social media, you know, expectations from parents. And I think there's never enough resource. There's never enough, you know, there was a shortage of teachers in Tasmania. I'm not sure if that was the same where you are, Richard, but, you know, it was really hard to get staff. You know, children needing to be referred to a paediatrician or a psychologist, or, you know, wait lists were 3 years, and that was a real challenge because you feel like you're not doing enough and you're not providing the support that you really want to provide to each student and each family.
Yeah,
that was a challenge.
Absolutely. A huge frustration. And yes, a lot of listeners, regardless of where they are in the world, I'm sure will relate to those things. So when you're thinking about those years, quite a few years as a principal, what type of leader were you trying to become? I mean, in the midst of all those challenges, in the midst of the good days and the bad days, you know, what type of leader were you aspiring to become?
I think I wanted, and it comes back to that idea of looking for opportunities. So I wanted to be an optimistic leader. I wanted to be someone who was always looking for the opportunities in things, for, you know, seeing the best, and someone who wanted to provide opportunities for everybody in the school community to be a lifelong learner. So not just the children, but the staff as well, and for everyone to have opportunities to grow and learn and, you know, become better at whatever it was that they wanted to get better in. So, you know, nurturing people's strengths and providing opportunities for everyone to be their best selves.
Yeah, I think it's super important for anybody, you know, in that leadership role, to be an optimist. You know, somebody who, you know, through the choppy waters, can still see some sort of a light at the end of a tunnel. And use the word opportunity. I mean, you've talked already about, you know, you like to look for opportunities yourself, but very, very quickly you added in for staff, for pupils. So that idea of having somebody who's running the show, looking for opportunities with that sort of mindset, I think, is hugely helpful. Did your understanding, I suppose, of leadership change? I mean, it's over a significant period of time. Did it change at all over that period of time?
Definitely.
Okay.
I think, so one of the other things that I really loved about being a principal is it's such a diverse role. Like every day is different. You are never bored. You're never sitting around twiddling your thumbs. It's every day is so different and you never know what's going to come up. And I love that. I love that diversity of the role and the relationships that came with that. So across the school community, you know, interacting with different people and learning about them and you know, it's that I found that really interesting. And so what I learned was how important it is to appreciate people and see their strengths and nurture them, and how important it is to have a diverse team around you. So, you know, I think sometimes leaders are tempted to surround themselves with people who are like them because they think the same, and it's which is a great temptation. But what I learned was how valuable it is to have people who think differently to you, and to have that and people who, you know, challenge you. When I think back on every leadership team that I worked on, there was always someone who would ask me challenging questions. So, you know, I'd be there going, I've got this fabulous idea and let's do this. And then they'd be saying, yeah, but what's that actually going to look like on the ground, Ange? So, you know, someone to always pull me back to earth and unpack it a bit more and really look at the nuts and bolts of what was happening. And, you know, for someone who tends to be a bit of a blue sky thinker and the, you know, I've got this great vision, it's really great to have other people on the team who have a different skill set to you. So I think that was one of the things that I learned. And the other thing was that, you know, with that passion for wanting to get things happening and having these grand visions for what you want to develop, it's really important to slow down and bring people with you. And, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the busyness and the rushing and I want to get this done. But slowing down is something that's really important, I think, as a school leader, and prioritizing what's most important.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. And folks listening will resonate with that, Ange. So, when you talk about that idea, yes, a number of things changed over the years. I mean, there's no textbook for headship out there. I mean, you learn on the job. You learn through getting it right, through getting it wrong, and it's over a period of time. And I just love that idea where you talked about, you know, after a period of time, realizing you need to bring people onto the team that think differently to you. And that key word there, challenge, you know, to be able to challenge, well, there's a high level of trust, you know, trusted colleagues, but that challenge, I suppose you're thinking about De Bono and his hats, you know, that black hat, the caution hat. Somebody needs to play that role, particularly whenever you're coming up with all sorts of wonderful ideas and fantastic creativity. So getting that balance right is really important. If we move in from the leadership headship side of things, and I suppose there's probably an overlap here, because you're talking about nurturing people, you're talking about growth, you're talking about, you know, seeing the best in people. When did coaching first enter into your whole journey that all the way through then?
Yeah, so I first came across the concept of coaching in 2007, and it was a time when the department were investing a lot in the professional learning of educators. So there was a lot of resource put into developing people's capacity, which was fantastic, and I feel so grateful to becoming a leader in that time. And I went to a cognitive coaching 5-day course where I learned a lot about coaching and was then able to implement those skills as a school leader, but it's also where I first met the wonderful Di Henning, who was also a school leader. She was at the other end of Tasmania, but it's where we first connected. And so I was so happy to reconnect with Di through GCI, and she is now my coach again, which it's interesting sometimes how life circles back and brings you back in connection with people, you know, that you've known previously. So I'm loving that.
Yeah, fantastic. Di Henning has a lot to answer for as far as the coaches go worldwide. And I mean that in a very positive way. Di's had a fantastic influence on a lot of very good people and still continues to do so, including myself. So that's lovely. Were there any moments when you started to get into coaching, so going back to 2007, you know, as you started to get your head around it, where you thought to yourself, you know, this actually really changes things, this coaching approach. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so one of the things I remember being really amazed about was the power of paraphrasing, and how it kind of had this magical ability where you know, summarize what someone said or repeat back, you know, their words in a slightly different way, and they'd go, oh yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Or, you know, they'd be amazed that you were saying exactly what they were saying. But I think for people to hear their own thinking out loud is something that, you know, that's been something that's been of interest to me in my whole career, you know, how powerful that can be. And the other thing is that it's coaching conversations don't have to be formal. And so, you know, when I first started, it was all about how do we make time to sit down and, you know, talk for 45 minutes or an hour. But it was realizing that coaching conversations can happen anywhere, and it can be with anyone in the school community. And I think coaching has been a really valuable tool for me in conversations I've had with parents, you know, in inviting them to share their thinking and their perspective and really noticing what's going on with them.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I've noted a few things down here, Ange, and it's really interesting. What the first thing you said was the power of paraphrasing, and that's not one a lot of folks would choose. And I think it's fantastic that you mentioned it, because it's, in many ways, it's one of the poorer relatives within, you know, the coaching skills framework. But as you say, it's such a powerful tool. Using your words, somebody else thinking out loud and hearing their own words fed back to them, you know, can be a real aha moment when they actually hear their own thinking fed back to them. And so paraphrasing is fantastic.
That was a lovely paraphrase, Richard.
Thank you very much. But you're right, it's such a powerful thing. And where I think people notice for the first time, because they think that they can have lots of conversations themselves in their own head. I'll just mull over this for a wee while. I'll think about the pros and cons. I'll maybe jot a few notes. But until you have another human being on the other side of the table or a screen like this actually feeding back your thinking to you, that's a very, very powerful thing, and something you can't do without somebody having a coaching conversation with you. And like you say, it can be in the corridor, it can be in the classroom, it can be walking out to the car park. It doesn't have to be in a formal scenario like that. So I'm really pleased. And you also mentioned as well, you know, parents, and quite often when we're talking about establishing coaching cultures, I think that's one element that's maybe overlooked a little bit, that it's a very, very, very powerful tool to help parents move forward in any number of things. Even just an opportunity you talked about, you know, letting them feel heard maybe for the first time. So having those skills as a leader, I think are hugely important. I'd love to ask a question. Did coaching, as you started to get your head around it and grapple with the skills and so on, did coaching challenge any of your assumptions about leadership, or did it have any effect on that?
It made me more reflective, I think, about the conversations that I was engaging in. And it also challenged the assumption that you have to have all the answers. So often as a school leader, I think I think educators are very good at wanting, like, it's why we go into the role. We want to help people. And so often we think that helping is providing all the answers or rescuing people from situations. And, you know, that can very quickly become a rod for your own back, because then people come and download all their issues and problems and challenges onto you, and you feel very heavy at the end of the day. And so while it can feel really good to be helping people and providing all the answers, that's not sustainable. No. And it's certainly not a recipe for good well-being. So realizing that the power of coaching is helping people to find their own solutions and helping them to recognize that they have the tools and the strengths to, you know, take action themselves. That was a great learning, and one that certainly made my life easier. Because sure, you don't have to have all the answers. It's helping people to see what they can do themselves.
Yeah, you're right. When we move into that headship position, there's a lot of pressure on us. Some of it's put on us by other people, some of it we put on ourselves. And I think that idea of having to have all the answers is a natural place that most people go. I went there myself. And when you're working in a busy, pressurized place, having to have all the answers is hard work. And the bottom line is you don't have all the answers. And therefore you're thinking, am I going to look like, you know, I've been misplaced in this role, or, you know, how am I going to build credibility when I can't answer all the questions? But again, that light bulb moment, it's a real sense of release and relief whenever you think, I don't have to know all the answers. And developing that, I suppose, that muscle and that discipline to be able to say in conversations that, you know, I don't know the answer, you know, let's talk about this a little bit more. What do you think? Let's come back to it later. I think that's a fantastic thing for anybody, particularly listening to this, who's maybe just into leadership, or maybe they're thinking about moving into leadership, and just using some of those coaching skills and realizing I don't have to actually have all the answers here. One of the things that you mentioned, we met a wee while ago just to have an initial sort of a prep discussion. And one of the things you mentioned in our meeting was very much around the coaching skill of noticing. What does that word mean to you, noticing?
So noticing is, and I guess that's something that definitely became more apparent to me the longer I was in leadership. Noticing is so important. It's because it's about raising awareness. So it's raising your own awareness and becoming kind of hypervigilant about what is going on for people, but also what's going on for yourself. And through raising that awareness, you can make better decisions, and you can make decisions that are aligned with your own values and beliefs if you have that heightened sense of awareness. In a coaching conversation, it's doing things like being aware of the language that people are using, you know, if they're repeatedly using a phrase and you're noticing that. It's noticing the emotions that sit behind what people are saying. It's noticing their body language. It's noticing where they pause and being aware of, you know, what's not being said. So coaching can be just a very surface level listening to the words. But noticing is that skill of going beyond the words.
I like that idea, going beyond the words. And you used, well, first of all, raising awareness, which is really important, but hypervigilant. You know, that's something that's really intentional. I mean, if you're hypervigilant about anything, you know, you are very much focused. You're in the zone. So thinking about, you know, noticing what's going on, I like the fact that you mentioned noticing what's going on with yourself is very important. And I think sometimes we're blind to that, but equally then noticing what's going on with the people around us. If you're thinking about, you know, a lot of young leaders coming into the role now, quite often they're missing stuff because they're simply moving too quickly. So how does then noticing affect the quality of your conversations as a school leader?
I think noticing is is really important as a school leader, because it comes down to building trust and building the culture. Because if you are aware and present for people and noticing what is happening for them, it's building that sense of trust, because then you can have the conversations about what you notice. You know, if you say to a teacher, I notice that lately you haven't been coming into the staff room, or, you know, I noticed that you've been really quiet lately and haven't been saying much. Is everything okay with you? So as a leader, if you are so busy that you're not taking the time to notice what's going on for your people, you can really miss things, and that can damage relationships and ultimately damage the culture of the school.
It's
really important.
Absolutely. But a key word the phrase you used there was building trust. And one of the main ways of building trust is first of all to notice the people around you. Because when you notice people, then, and I've written this down, I've actually put a circle around it, is becoming a better decision maker. So you can make a decision about where to go with the conversation. You can make a decision about, some significant thing about a staffing issue. You can make a decision about a number of different things if you have prioritized noticing in the first place. So if we think about the whole idea of decision making. So let's say I'm a leader of a school, and I decide, you know what, Ange is bringing a lot of wisdom into this scenario here. I'm going to try and improve my noticing. How will that help me become a better decision maker?
I think it comes back to that awareness of what's going on for you. So it's looking at things at a deeper level. I think often in the busyness of schools, like every day as a school leader, you are making so many decisions. So it's taking the time to slow down and really reflect on what's going on and what you can see and hear, what nonverbal cues there are in a situation. And I think as a school leader, it can really affect the decision making of your team, because if you are missing things that are going on for your team, it can affect the morale and can then affect the decisions that are being made by that team. If there's not a high level of trust, people are not feeling comfortable to say what they really think or to challenge you. Yeah. And so part of that is slowing down and being present. And I think as a school leader, especially now, it's very easy to rush from one thing to another and not take the time to be present in each situation and really be there and notice.
Yeah. But I like the fact you mentioned team as well. You know, if I'm a new principal and I want to develop that noticing muscle, that's going to have a positive impact on my relationships and the trust that I build. But can you imagine then a school senior leadership team where everybody starts to develop that talent of or skill of noticing? Then as a team collectively, we're making better decisions, which, you know, can only benefit the school, which is fantastic. You mentioned how noticing can help nurture strengths and talents in others. Tell us a bit more about that, Ange.
I think that's something really important as a school leader. Being able to notice other people's strengths and what they're good at and what they bring to the team. And I think that's something that I was always looking for in the people around me. And whatever it is, whatever you're noticing that is their strength, that's giving them opportunities in that thing. So you might notice that someone is, you know, particularly good at organizational skills. They're so attention to detail is their thing. So you put them into an area where they're developing that skill and capitalizing on it. And so I think, you know, you might notice that another person has got really great relationships with families and parents. And so you might put them into a support role where that's, you know, a large part of their job, where they're talking to parents and bringing families in for meetings. And so it's matching what needs to happen in your school with the strengths and talents of the people that you have. And I think that's where teams really hum along and work best. It's where people are leveraging their strengths and you're utilizing the strengths of each person on their team. And I think that's why it's important that it's diverse, because if everyone has the same skill set, who's going to do those other hard things that you don't enjoy or don't do so well?
Yes. And it's lovely when you have a diverse team, then noticing becomes, it just becomes so much more natural, because there are other things then to notice, because people are bringing different strengths to the table. And that's where a team really comes together, I think, when you have that diversity. And I love that phrase you used, you know, consciously looking for strengths in staff. I mean, how many leaders out there, we hope there's a decent number, are able to say, you know what, intentionally most days I do make a bit of time where I consciously look for strengths in the people on my team. And it's something that we know that that discipline is a really important thing, because quite often in the busyness and the madness of the job, we miss the strengths in others. And there is so much that the other people in the team have to offer. But it takes us to slow down, go back to your phrase, slow down and actually notice. And when we do notice it, then articulating that and actually telling the other person that we've noticed is really important. You spoke as well when we were prepping for the conversation about noticing, helping your own well-being as a leader. Now that's a really interesting one. You know, that feels really important. What did that look like for you?
Well, I think it starts with noticing what's going on for you and what works for you and what is impacting on the way you feel. So I think being self-reflective is really an important part of noticing for your own well-being. But I think noticing to be practicing the skill of noticing, you need to slow down. You can't do that while you're rushing. And so what I noticed was that I needed to intentionally do that and to choose to go at a slower pace and to be more present. And so that was definitely something that I learned over time. When I think back to when I was first a leader, it was, I want to do everything at once, and being busy was kind of a badge of honor. It was, I'm so busy. Whereas now, one of the things that I do with a group of friends every year is we create a word that guides us through a year. And so 3 years ago, my word was space, creating space and having space and making space for what's important. And I liked that word so much, I kept it for the next year. And then this year, my word is expansiveness, which is kind of aligned with the idea of space. But the idea of space is making the time and prioritizing being present and slowing down and taking the time to notice things.
Yeah.
So, I think it's prioritizing that as a school leader and saying it's okay. It is okay for me to take the time to go and have these conversations with my teachers, because that time is important and it's building trust and it's letting them know that I see them and I hear their voice. So I think making the time for that is something that should be valued and prioritised.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely with you. I love your phrase talking about busy becomes a badge of honour in many ways, and particularly, you know, young leaders going into the job initially, that we've got to seem busy. Because if we're not busy, it means we're not doing anything. And I suppose that just comes with experience. You know, that idea, and you used your word for 2 years ago and then last year as well was space. Actually being able to slow down a little bit. Because actually, you know, the best leaders out there are disciplined enough to notice when they need to slow down. But then they actually intentionally slow down. They actually do it. Rather than just thinking about it, they actually do it. So it is something that you have to learn to do, I think, over time. And it's lovely if you go into a school where there's somebody else who has learned it and has, you know, grappled with it and is really doing well with that, I suppose, discipline, because then you can look at them as, in many ways, as a bit of a mentor. But it is something that you have to actually learn to do, because, I mean, the majority of leaders out there, you can't maintain that level of busyness, that intensity. I mean, the human body just simply doesn't allow it to happen. So use that word reflective, you know, being a reflective practitioner and, you know, just looking around your day, your diary, your week, and creating that time where you intentionally slow down and be that little bit more reflective. So I think that's really helpful for folks who are listening. We're giving people permission to actually slow down a little bit, which is, you know, so important. So important. There'll be a big, you know, relief. People will be driving home in the car, they're out walking the dog going, I'm actually allowed to slow down a little bit. Because that's where you have reflective practice. And Di Henning, if she's listening, will be thinking, tremendous. The reflective practitioner needs to move in there. That's another discipline that we need to very much develop. If we're thinking about, I suppose, this idea of, in many ways, unhurried leadership. You use the phrase, living in an unhurried way. And it does sound, in many ways, countercultural, but you know, how do we do that? How do we live in an, I just love that phrase, an unhurried way? What does that look like?
I think it comes back to exactly what you said, Richard, about giving yourself permission to slow down, because I think sometimes we are so hard on ourselves and we are thinking, I need to be busy to be productive. But what I've learned is that often the best decisions that you make or the best outcomes come from where you've been more intentional and you've taken the time to really consider it and look at it from different perspectives, notice, you know, what the impacts will be for different people in the community. And that's where you get, you know, the most impact. It's where you're making more considered decisions and you're taking the time to really think about, you know, what will this mean for people and what will they notice if this is put in place. So I think it's giving yourself permission and it's prioritizing it. So it's saying this is okay for me to be spending the time and to be slowing down. I don't have to be doing everything at 100 miles an hour. I can take my time with this.
Yeah, I like that idea. The whole concept of considered decisions. I mean, that's a fantastic. That's what leaders, you know, we should be aspiring to be able to make considered decisions. Okay, there's times when you have to make a decision in a half a second. There are times that the job requires that, but largely we should be that bit more disciplined and intentional about saying, I'm going to slow down. I'm going to think about this for a little while, mull over it. Take a day or two, talk to other people, a coaching conversation in between, you know, those opportunities where, you know, in a coaching conversation, there's the opportunity to really slow down, you know, and that, in many ways, that's the role of the coach. You know, he or she is coming along to help that school leader, that school principal intentionally just turn the volume down a little bit and unpack things at a sensible pace to ultimately have a considered decision at the end of it. And if our school leaders are making more regular considered decisions, that's only going to benefit, you know, in many ways, the whole school. So yes, there's a big difference between being busy and being effective, and those folks who are a little bit more considered in their decision making are really doing that largely because they're slowing down, they're noticing more. What role, and I'm keen to find this out, what role has yoga and mindfulness, because I know that's a passion of yours, played in shaping your approach? Tell us a bit more about that, Ange.
I think it's been huge in shaping my approach, but also in shaping who I am as a person, because honestly, as a school leader, yoga was, it kept me sane. It was my third space. So, you know, on the way home from work, it would be, I would go to yoga and so then would be prepared to come home and leave whatever had happened during the day behind, a different way of thinking, a different mindset. But I think there's so many parallels between coaching and yoga and the way of thinking in yoga. So I'm a yoga teacher as well, and I love seeing how these things line up. And one of the concepts in the Yoga Sutras is svadhyaya, which means self-study, which is basically noticing. So it's noticing what's going on for you and being aware of, you know, when I'm in a pose and I'm hating this and it's feeling really uncomfortable and why is that coming up for me, and noticing, you know, where you go slow and where you go fast in your practice. It's noticing what your mind is doing. It's noticing what your breath is doing. And so that idea of self-study and that, you know, your body is your greatest teacher,
yes.
That is, you know, so powerful. And I think as a leader, we need to remember that we are our greatest teacher. And so what we notice about ourselves, it's teaching us how to be a better leader. So, you know, what triggers us? What makes us feel uncomfortable? What do we need to learn more about? So being reflective on what you're noticing is going to make you a better leader. So I think there's great alignment between yoga and coaching and leadership.
Fantastic. As a result of this podcast, Angela, there'll be loads of people signing up for your class. Well, apologies for that. I love that phrase or that idea, self-study. You know, I think about, you know, as a head over many, many years, you spend so much of your time studying everybody else, which is an important part of the job. But how much time do you spend studying yourself? You know, what are you noticing about yourself? And maybe going back to your phrase, being hypervigilant, you know, what are you noticing about what's going on with you, with your thinking, you know, physically, emotionally, all of those different things. So just about raising that awareness again, I think is really, really helpful. I'm gonna turn things around a little bit choppier now. So let's think about the barriers or the challenges that you faced over the years in your coaching journey. What sort of things have come up that have just been difficult, hard going?
Oh, well, I think, you know, there's so many things that have been challenging. And I think, you know, we kind of alluded to some of those earlier on, talking about how society's changed. And so I think in your coaching journey, sometimes it can be really hard for people to find the time to sit and have that conversation with you. It's busy. People feel a lot of pressures. They feel like they have limited time. So it can be really hard for people to give themselves permission to have that space to sit down and have a conversation. And I think it is something that's what I hear from school leaders in my coaching role a lot, that they value that time and space to sit and talk through something and really unpack it. And it's kind of this quarantined little space in time that they give themselves. But I find one of the challenges is people giving themselves the time to do that, people allowing themselves the time and the space to have a coaching conversation. So I think that time, school leaders find it really hard to give themselves time.
You're right. And that resonates so well and so much with me, Ange, because, and as a coach, you do feel bad and you feel frustrated when folks won't give the time for the conversation. And, you know, I have a number of folks who are school leaders and they're still at that stage in their career, early in their career, where they're working under a lot of pressure. There's a lot of things that need to be done. And that coaching conversation next week, do you know what? I just haven't got the time. I can't fit it in. There's too many things going on. Now, there's another group of folks that I've been working with and maybe for a little bit longer. Maybe they've been around a few more corners. They're at the other end of the scale where they're coming along saying, Richard, do you know what? Next week, I have a mad number of things to do. I would love a coaching conversation this week to prepare for that. And that's, you know, that's music to my ears. So in many ways, it's just that little bit more experience, you know, where these school leaders realize the huge benefits of, let's actually take even 30 minutes and guess what? Slow down a little bit in order to be better prepared for that mad week next week or that meeting, you know, in 2 days' time that you know is going to be tricky. So I suppose it is, I can understand completely that, just that frustration around, you know, the time side of things. What about the whole idea of unlearning things over the years? So thinking about, you know, as a leader and a coach, and I'm fascinated by this idea, you know, of unlearning. And I think it's a very important thing. Does anything come to mind for you, Ange, that you've had to unlearn?
Yeah, I think, well, a lot of what we've talked about is about unlearning bad habits. Mm. And I think one of the things, particularly with, you know, social media and technology and email, you know, there's so much that we put expectations on ourselves around those things. Mm. So we, you know, think we have to be checking our email all the time. But one of the things that I learned was that I can put in place some boundaries around that, and I don't have to be checking my email, you know, hourly. I can be set aside, you know, two times in my day, half an hour, that's when I'm going to look at my email. So understanding that we can put in place habits that can be help us maintain our boundaries and well-being, and make us more efficient and effective. Because we can kind of become a bit of a slave to these things, thinking, and really it's our own thinking that's doing that. So we can change our mindset around expectations and what we need to do. So I think unlearning some of those things that, you know, around busyness and feeling like we need to be busy all the time, we can make those changes ourselves. So, and that's really empowering. You know, when you do it, you're feeling like, wow, you know, I have the power to do this. I can make this change. Yeah.
Fantastic. And that's where coaching conversations come in. You know, if you've got a good coach coming in on a regular basis, you know, he or she can help you notice these things, and then, you know, figure out ways as to how to address them as best you can. Let's jump into the world of GCI and essentially what you're doing at the moment over the last few years. So since joining GCI, what would you say you've enjoyed most about the work?
Oh, I love it. It brings me great joy. Doing this work brings me great joy. It's I love this job. I love the individual coaching for all the reasons that we've talked about today. And I think, you know, thinking about what you were saying about school leaders carving out the time to have that conversation and a school leader saying, oh, I'm so busy. This year I had someone who had moved from an assistant head of school position to a head of school position. And we had booked in a conversation while she was an assistant head of school, and it happened to fall on her first day in her new leadership position. And she said, I'm going to keep this and let's talk through what's going on. And it was such a privilege to coach someone in their first day of principalship, and that she made the space to have that time together, and, you know, how valuable it was to make that time and have that conversation. So I think, you know, the individual coaching is great. And I also love sharing, you know, as a facilitator, sharing how people can coach in their own context and providing professional learning around that is a lot of fun.
Superb. Yeah. Imagine having fun at work. I mean, who would have thought?
I know. My husband says that. He says, you look far too happy going off to work every day. It's like,
There's something wrong. Whenever you look at all the different schools you're in, so maybe in one-to-one coaching, and that's a real privilege. I mean, you know, I'm in a similar boat where you're going in, spending intense times with school leaders. Are there any, you know, recurring themes that you're noticing across schools right now, whether it's challenges, whether it's highs, lows, or anything like that?
I think there's a few things. I think there is the busyness of life in schools, and it feels like there are things constantly being piled onto people's plates, but nothing ever comes off. So I think workload is a pretty consistent theme. But I think too, issues with students and concerns about students and staff and well-being often comes up as a bit of a theme too. Mm-hmm. And as school leaders, people worrying about how their team are going and their students are going and how they can support them better.
I think that, I mean, it comes straight back to my memory, that just that duty of care. You know, when you walk into the building every day, you know, you feel that responsibility, which is part of the job, but wanting to look out for people, you know, for all the right reasons. And in many ways, that's where developing those coaching skills and being able to notice, you're in a much better position to then, you know, be able to make good decisions about what to do next. I think that's really, really helpful. If you're thinking about, I mean, there's bound to be a lot of different stories, and we're not naming specific people here, but, you know, can you think about a scenario where you know, the power of a coaching conversation just had such a really big impact on the individual.
I'm thinking back to somebody that I worked with, and it's actually somebody that I knew in a different role many years ago. And, you know, we worked in neighbouring schools, and I'm working with him again, and he is such a great leader. And the feedback I'm getting is how much he loves the challenge in those conversations and the privilege of having the time to sit down and really think things through in his busy world. Mm-hmm. But that what he really appreciates is the opportunity for me to ask him some challenging questions and to think differently about things. So, you know, I think getting that feedback makes me feel like what I'm doing is worthwhile and valuable to school leaders, because having those conversations leads to them having a different perspective.
Yeah. It's a real privilege to be in that position where the person at the other side of the table, the principal, the school leader, whoever it might be, you know, actively encourages you to challenge them in those conversations. Because it's just such a healthy thing for a school leader to do, is to invite, you know, helpful challenge and support. Because, I mean, as a coach, to be able to develop a really good level of trust with your coachee and then be able to push a little bit is superb, because that's where you're seeing the growth, you know, and you're noticing things and you're able to celebrate success. And then for that person to want to see that happen on a regular basis.
And that's it, Richard. It's the coming back. So we have regular coaching, and it's the coming back and celebrating what's happened since the last conversation and seeing that he's following through and his actions are having impact. That's exciting.
Fantastic. It's always good to hear that word impact. Impact's a very important word. If we're thinking down the line, future-wise, what do you think might be the next big shift or development, you know, in coaching and in education?
And in the world, AI, obviously, is something that is growing so quickly and becoming part of our lives. And I think that is something that we need to explore and be aware of and maybe do a little bit of thinking about, reflecting on. And I think, you know, there's so many perspectives and views and opinions about it. So I think some raised awareness about that and what it might mean in the world of school leadership and coaching. And I know Jim Knight is doing quite a lot of research into this and working with this. So I'm kind of keeping an eye on what he's saying about it and what it will mean for coaching.
Yeah. No, it's definitely something to be thinking about. But I think, you know, as an encouragement to all coaches out there that are listening and all leaders, you know, the computer will never take the place of a human being. You know, I mean, even the conversation we've had today, Ange, has been lovely, and it's inspired me. You know, if anybody's watching this back, you know, you're very animated in your answers and so on, and that's infectious, you know, and that sort of thing is what we as coaches bring to conversations, you know, and that power of noticing, you know, that's not going to happen, you know, through AI. So it's about taking, yes, some of those tools and putting them to good use, but at the same time, you know, having that human element very much at the centre of all that we do. If you're trying to encourage some of those school leaders out there who are maybe at the start of the coaching journey or process for them, they're dipping their toe in the water a little bit, what sort of things would you point them towards to sort of start things off, just to whet their appetite?
I think find out a bit more about coaching and what it means and what it is and what it isn't, because that's one of the things that I often find, like, people have ideas about coaching but haven't looked deeply into it. So I would encourage them to find out more about what coaching is. And it always fascinates me how coaching is both simple and complex at the same time. So You know, it's very simple to have a coaching conversation and jump in and get started. And that is what I would encourage people to do. Like, the more you practice coaching, the better you get at it. And it's not going to happen if you don't practice. It's like standing on your head in yoga. You know, it's never going to happen if you don't start somewhere and practice. So it's about jumping in and giving it a go. And it's okay. Give yourself permission to make mistakes and learn and develop and grow, because that's how we get better as leaders and as coaches. So, yeah, jump in and give it a go.
Great words of encouragement, Ange. I think a lot of people will be, you know, given a bit of a boost as they listen to that. Ange, what can I say? Thank you so much for joining us on the Coaching and Education podcast. I know that many of our listeners will resonate with that, just that invitation to slow down, you know, to create a little bit of space to lead with greater intentionality and presence. And, you know, tomorrow, next day, as school leaders go into the office, as they walk around the playground, as they, you know, move around the school building, in many ways, you know, they're just being a little bit more intentional about slowing down and noticing themselves and what's going on for them, but also noticing the people around them. You've given us all plenty of food for thought as we continue to develop, many of us as coaches, some of us as leaders. And thanks to everybody who's listening. It's really important that you folks check in with us. If you've enjoyed this episode of Coaching and Education, please do feel free to share it with colleagues, other school leaders maybe in your network. And do check out our website, growthcoaching.com.au, for access to loads more resources, including other podcast episodes and details of all of our training courses. And so, until the next time, thank you for listening. And wherever you are leading, coaching, or learning this week, may you continue to create the space to notice what really matters.